RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation. The industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
And by Cabela's. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com and make sure your next camping trip is one for the record books.
And by Camp Casual. Family owned and operated since 2014, Camp Casual is committed to bringing retro-inspired dishware and vintage home goods to the camping and RVing community. Visit campcasual.com to see what fun products you can add to liven up your campsite, your RV, and your home.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes, and also Sweet Maggie the camping dog.
You can read about our adventures at RVFTA.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are diving into one of the most important topics out there. First aid basics. People get hurt and accidents happen no matter where you are, and being prepared can make all the difference in the world.
We've got an expert here to help us out. Sarah Hubble is an RVFTA listener and nurse practitioner. She's also a college professor and gives us a great intro course to the best first aid practices.
You might think being prepared means buying a first aid kit online and hoping for the best. We know it's worth it to take your first aid prep to the next level. You are listening to episode number 204, First Aid Basics for Home and On the Road.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, First Aid Basics for Home and On the Road, it's time for our opening segment, What's Cooking with RVFTA. This segment has been taking the podcasting world by storm with all of the great recipes we're sharing. People have been mocking my French toast recipe all over the World Wide Web for weeks.
But have they been making it?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I haven't seen photographic
evidence. I know people
have
been making my chili because everybody's been telling me.
Totally true. Drats. You win. You win.
People have been telling me that they've been making my chili. Well,
Stephanie's got another great recipe here because my idea of us going every other week is actually Stephanie going 75% of the time. But before we dive into this new recipe, which is great, like an awesome make-ahead recipe that the kids and I really love, it's time for a sponsored message from our friends at Cabela's, who have all kinds of cool Halloween stuff going on.
They do.
Stores.
And somebody just posted in our Facebook group, RVFTA, the group, they said, well, it's not trick or treating, but we had a Halloween fun at Cabela's. And it was actually, they had the pictures of the Peanuts gang and all the different, I think, pumpkin painting.
Oh, there's free crafts, there's pumpkin toss games,
and
costume
so
parade.
They had like a bunch of pictures that they actually posted
in the group.
Do you
think they did cookie decorating?
I'm not sure.
It's an option.
But you still have another weekend to do that if you're listening to this podcast when it comes out. So go to www.cabelas.com/Halloween and you're going to be able to find near you all the
it's
details.
It's actually October 26th to the 31st. So it's a real long, it's like a week practically.
Yeah. So you've got time. Go.
And they're,
go,
they're doing a very similar event at Bass Pro. So you also want to go to basspro.com and also you can find information about their events there.
Absolutely. So last week we talked about the Cabela's Polar Cap Equalizer coolers that have become staples in our camping setup. But there's another Polar Cap product that we've also fallen in love with over the course of the summer. And those are the Polar Cap tumblers. Now, these come in 20 ounce or 30 ounce in black or khaki.
You have fallen in love with your khaki 20 ounce.
Yes. So I don't really, the 30 ounce is too big, like I say, for my delicate lady hands.
I'm a black 30 ounce guy. You're a 20 ounce khaki guy.
Except sometimes you still use my 20 ounce khakis and I say, get your hands off my 20 ounce khaki.
The important thing about these is they're affordable. The 20 ounce is $14.99 and the 30 ounce is $19.99. they keep our coffee hot for hours. And they
your
also
cold drinks cold for hours.
If you put some ice in there and a nice iced tea or something, that's going to be cold all day long.
Now, you know that these are like the working man's version of another brand's much more expensive insulated tumblers.
Like significantly
wink, wink.
More expensive.
Yeah. So if you've been seeing those and you're like, oh, I don't want to spend that much, these have been awesome. We love these to death. They're in regular, I think every single day we're using them in the house for both hot and cold drinks.
I've been bringing my coffee to work in my 30 ounce.
All right. So we'll link to the ones that we have over in the show notes at RVFTA, but you can also go to Cabela's.com to see their complete lineup of affordable outdoor gear. And they really do have lots of affordable outdoor gear. It's a fact.
And we'll be going to one of the Cabela stores in December, kind of early December, and highlighting some of our favorite gifts for the upcoming holiday season. Stephanie, talk to me about this make-ahead meal, your tortilla pie.
Okay. So this is not, I'm not sharing revolutionary meals, you know, because sometimes I feel like in the food world.
That's my job.
Yeah. You get bombarded with like all these like really cool, complex, oh, so fancy. And then it's like, but will my kids eat it? Can I actually make it? Is this easy? And, you know, I'm kind of trying to be like unhip and uncool and just share things that have worked over the years and been staples. And this is another one of those. So like tacos are like the thing that everybody in my family eats without complaining.
If you don't do tacos on Taco Tuesday, it's like a riot.
Okay. Tonight was Taco Tuesday and I did not do tacos. Instead, I had the nerve to do stuffed peppers. My two boys,
they're protesting right
now, were
in
shock. And what they actually did was they scooped out the filling for the stuffed peppers into tortillas and ate it like a taco because it was Taco Tuesday.
So offensive.
That's what I live with. That's my life. Okay.
Those little animals.
I know they are. It's brutal. It's death by a thousand cuts, you know, when you make dinner for kids every day.
I never realized it until I started doing some of the
cooking.
And
you see now. You see how hard it is.
Oh, I put down like some awesome scrambled eggs on Saturday morning. And Wes is like, I don't eat scrambled eggs.
I'm not eating that. Yeah.
It's like, what kid in America doesn't eat scrambled eggs?
So this is my tortilla pie. And the reason why I love it, it's like tacos. They love it. But I can make it ahead of time. And usually what I do is I make one of these for a dinner during the week. And then I just double the recipe. I put one in a Pyrex in the freezer. And then on our next camping trip, it just goes right into the refrigerator and it's ready to serve at the campground.
Heats up really well. And Stephanie, now that you mention it, is this something I could just heat up on the Blackstone? I haven't done that in the past because I didn't have a Blackstone. I mean, could I slap this down on the Blackstone and heat it up?
I don't know about that. I mean, you'd have to have a cover probably to get it all
warm
all the way through.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to figure
that
out. Okay, so this is a tortilla pie. Are you ready for it? You're going to make your filling kind of exactly like you make tacos. So I use a pound of ground beef, a can of black or pinto beans. We prefer black, but for years I use pintos. A small onion, a red or a green pepper, 3 cloves of garlic. Okay. And just like you do with tacos, right? You're going to like, or chili, you're going to brown all the meat, saute all the vegetables, mix it all up. Add salt and pepper, 3 to 4 tablespoons of chili powder. I probably throw in cumin just because I always like a little touch of that, but you don't have to. It's up to you and your taste buds. Then throw in a can of the diced tomatoes with garlic and onion. You know, like it comes in those cans that it has the garlic and onion. It just gives it a little extra punch. Throw that in there.
And now the next ingredient is the most important one.
The cheese.
But only 8 ounces.
No, but we're not going to get there yet. Okay, so now you have your filling. So now you have your filling and you're going to take your tortillas. Take a Pyrex, spray, you know, your Pyrex, grease your Pyrex. Then put one tortilla at the bottom of your Pyrex. Now you can use either melted butter if you're like me and believe there is absolutely no substitute for butter. But if you're, you know, oh, butter's bad for you, wah, 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 then just use a little spray olive oil or whatever and spray the tortilla.
Sounds like you just said that people that don't like butter are like crybabies.
I kind of feel that it's like a sin against humanity to be anti-butter. And it's this thing in our culture, right? Like everybody has to be like, oh, butter's bad for you.
Send Stephanie an email.
No, don't send me an email.
Stephanie@rvfta.com.
It'll go straight to spam. I have like a filter
for
butter haters.
Butter hater filter.
So you just like spray it. Now put the meat mixture and then some cheese and then you put another tortilla and then you put butter/oil. meat mixture, cheese. And you do that until your Pyrex is filled up, or you're out of meat mixture, you're out of your tortillas. I think I usually use a package of like 8 tortillas and kind of, you know, layer it like that. So it's like a pie. Then sprinkle the last of your 8 ounces of cheddar cheese on the top. Cover it with foil, bake it for 30 minutes in 375. Then what I do is I usually take off the foil and let the top brown a little bit and crisp up a little bit. Then you slice it just like a pie and you serve it, like with a dollop of sour cream on the top. It's so yummy. I mean, it's yummier than it sounds, to be honest with you.
Okay, so here's my take on this. It does feel like elevated over just a taco dinner.
Right.
And, I mean, it's roughly the same ingredients, but it feels like it's more special than
the cheese kind of like goes through all the different layers.
It's like a Mexican shepherd's pie is what it is. Feels like a little bit more warm.
Like a lasagna, a Mexican lasagna.
Is there such thing as a Mexican lasagna?
Well, this, okay.
Yes. But the point is, it's kind of like this warm, cozy fall day kind of treat where I don't necessarily associate tacos with that.
I think that you're correct. Tacos feel more summery.
This is more
and then
hearty.
This is more casserole-y, wintery, fall-y. I would agree with that.
And
yes.
You know, serve it with soup. Serve it with soup.
I never serve this with soup. This gets served usually with some brown rice.
I like to throw a little extra pico de gallo on top as well. That's just me.
On everything.
On everything.
Shepherd's pie. Just throw some pico de gallo on there. All right. So that's my tortilla pie. Make a double one night for dinner, and then you have it for the campground. I know that we all love cooking at the campground, but for me as a mom, sometimes I feel...
You don't have to do every meal that way.
No,
this is a great idea.
I feel so great about
Friday
having
night
make a
dinner.
Meal sometimes.
I mean, frankly, I don't love cook. I love cooking at the campground so much now, but not necessarily on Friday night.
You know,
Saturday morning, Saturday evening, something like that on a short weekend trip works a lot better. All right, Stephanie, this is a really awesome, important, and special episode of RVFTA. We've been talking for years about doing a great first aid episode.
We have this big board and we have a bazillion episodes. And then when we schedule out our season, a bunch of them don't make it. If we don't have we don't feel like we have the person or this first aid episode, how many seasons has this missed? We've moved it through seasons.
And I think there was two reasons. I think we were intimidated to put it together ourselves.
Yeah.
We didn't have
we hate to pretend we're the experts when we're
well,
not.
Well, we didn't have the expert to ask on the show. Well, the expert just happened to be out there listening to our podcast. She's an RVFTA podcast listener. She emailed us. I think over the summer, Sarah Hubble sent us a Facebook message and said, "Hey, I'm a nurse practitioner and I'm also a professor of nursing at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And I really think you guys should do an episode on first aid and I'd be happy to help you with it." And we were like, bingo, yes.
Oh, it was like the heavens opened and light shone down.
I was like, I'm sorry. I think she caught me on vacation or something. I was like, we're busy, a little bit busy right now. I'm going to get back in touch with you. We're going to make this happen.
We're busy. We're busy camping.
The irony. But I'm saying okay, a professor at UNC Chapel Hill. Who listens to our podcast and wants to do a first aid episode?
We're so lucky. This happens, honestly, more than it doesn't. We just feel that that's what happens all the time is the universe sends us the right people for the right topics, and it just keeps this show what it's all about.
I'm going to talk a little smack for a minute. I've heard other podcasts do first aid episodes in the camping sphere. This one's about 10 times better.
Sarah was so good. We just feel... Really, like I said, we feel blessed, but I really mean that. I mean, when people come along and they say, we want to share this information for your listeners, and it's the exact right kind of information that everybody needs, and they're so good at it, we just feel like all the pieces come together. And I also love it because I was able to hear from Sarah about how Sam and Hannah, her kids, listen to this show every week and how much they were excited that she was coming on the show. So, Sam and Hannah, your mom rocks, and you need to tell her that. You need to say, you rock,
and
mom.
What smart kids.
Yeah.
Listening to the RVFTA podcasts. I detect Ivy League futures.
Yeah.
Or UNC Chapel Hill futures. Let me just say it. UNC Chapel Hill, it's like an Ivy League, just as good.
It is, but let's also say that she is not on this show as a direct representative of the university.
No, we did not call up the university and say, do you have an RVer who is a first aid expert?
She is here speaking just on her own volition with her own knowledge and not being the, you know, the voice of any medical organization out there. We know we have to give her that disclaimer.
Within their Department of Nursing, they don't have a separate faculty for RV.
For RV. Right, exactly. Okay, so you want to buckle up because this is going to be the best first aid little intro rundown that you've heard. It's the best one I've ever heard.
Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are really excited to be here with Sarah Little Hubble, who is a DNP, RN, NPC, which from what I understand means nurse practitioner.
You got your letters right.
And the part I really did understand is that she's an assistant professor at UNC Chapel Hill in the School of Nursing. And we're so
excited. She's smart.
She's smart. And there's all these smart people around her as well. And we've been wanting to do this episode on first aid for a long time, and we never did. And when Sarah reached out to us, we were like, this is going to be perfect. Yay. We got to make an episode of this. So we're so excited to dive in and give you all kinds of basic first aid tips. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Camp Casual.
All right. Camp Casual is so excited to be celebrating the fall season by offering 25% off everything that is on their site over at campcasual.com with the code RVFTA25. That's all capital letters, RVFTA25. Those wonderful oversized mugs are perfect to wrap your hands around on a very cold, you know, autumn morning around the campfire or in the evening with one of your nice beverages, maybe from our previous podcast that we went over those delicious hot beverages. And then also you can check out their 12 dish set. They've got the cozy blankets that have been described as a basket of kittens. I mean, seriously, if you need to get cozy, Camp Casual is the way that you're going to get there.
Go for the Sequoia.
The Sequoia blanket is amazing. Perfect gift.
We want you to be safe on the road, and we want you to be warm and
cozy,
snuggly.
Cozy. All right. Go to campcasual.com to pick out your next cozy item today.
Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, we're so thankful that there's people out there that know what they're talking about when it comes to this stuff and that they find us and that they offer to share it with our audience. Thank you so much.
Thank you for this opportunity. I think it's really important that people understand some of the basics, especially when they're on the road.
I think it's really cool that we have an assistant professor at the UNC Chapel Hill School of Nursing that listens to our podcast. So I feel all sort
He loves your title, Sarah. He's starstruck.
I feel all kinds of flattered.
He appreciates that, you know. Schooling, definitely. All right. So you have all of the knowledge to help us be safer and more prepared on the road when we're RVing. It took me a little while to realize that, you know, kids can get sick and hurt on the road just like they do at home. And you know, it was probably into our second or third RVing season when I was like, wait a minute, I don't have the basics that I have at home when like somebody wakes up in the middle of the night coughing or whatever. And I kind of started to retrain my brain to have those basics in the RV. But you're going to help us not do it so haphazardly and be truly prepared on the road.
With more than just Band-Aids.
Right, exactly.
Which is what I think a lot of us do.
So are you ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right. So in this first segment, we're going to kind of go through just the basic things that can happen on the road and then what we should do to care for those things. And then in the second segment, we'll kind of get a little more, you know, sky view, a little broader, and we'll talk about other resources that are out there that people can learn more from. So let's just dive in to the most common thing that happens, especially if you're traveling with kids on the road, and that's wound care, because my kids get wounds, and I'm sure other people's do as well.
Our children are 10 times more likely to be wounded on the road.
Yeah. All right. So what are the basics of wound care?
Sure. So if someone does get hurt, you want to check first to see if there's any serious bleeding going on. And if there is, you want to apply pressure. Ideally, you'll have a dressing, meaning a bandage. If not, use what you have, clean as possible. One thing that people think about if there's some serious bleeding is you want to kind of cut it off and use a tourniquet. We don't do that anymore. But if it doesn't need a serious bleeding, then you just want to wash your hands. If you have gloves, you can put them on. If not, especially if it's your family, you can just wash your hands. Look for any visible dirt and clean the area with potable water. I'm going to say that a lot. So you just don't want to dunk it in the stream or use any old water. You want to try to use potable water so it doesn't have extra bacteria in it, with some soap, and then apply a bacitracin ointment to it. You want to actually avoid neomycin. A lot of people use Neosporin, but a lot of people are actually allergic to neomycin. So just a regular bacitracin is okay. And just apply a clean bandage. You want to avoid using hydrogen peroxide and alcohol and iodine, because that can actually damage the skin. People don't realize that. And just change it a couple of times a day and keep it clean until it's healed.
Two things I want to say already. For our listeners, if anything goes by too quickly, go to the show notes. We'll put all this in there so you can double check later and check on everything that Sarah's saying. And Sarah, I'm also already realizing that we not only need some of these things in the RV, but we really do truly need them when we're hiking in a backpack, correct?
Absolutely. And you can create, when we talk later about a first aid kit, you could create a mini first aid kit for use when you're out hiking.
All right. Now, I also have another question for you. So I think that you said not to use those alcohol swabs. Is that what you were indicating?
Yes. You can use, they have cleaning swabs, antibacterial swabs. You can use those if you want. But the use of alcohol on the wound can sting and actually doesn't do as good a job as just the antibacterial wipe.
All right. Good tip. Now, blisters. These are common because we sit there and we get our kids like new hiking shoes or ourselves new hiking shoes before we go on a trip or something like that. And then we wind up with blisters on our feet because we're doing activities that we don't normally do, or those keen sandals or whatever. So what should we do? Because I probably do the wrong thing. I'm one of those like pop it, get it over with people.
Here, kid, have a glass of water.
You're not alone.
I know I'm doing the wrong thing.
So first of all, I'd recommend if you have those new shoes and they're kind of wearing and you feel the hurting coming on, you can go ahead and use what's called moleskin, M-O-L-E-S-K-I-N. And you can apply that. It has a sticky back and it helps to protect the skin from developing a blister. But then if you do get a blister, don't pop it, because that just turns it into an open wound. So you want to clean it and then apply a dressing. They make them such that they're circle dressings with a hole cut out, or you could just put a dressing over it as a cushion, and the body will absorb that fluid. Now, if it does pop, then just treat it like a wound that we already talked about.
Sarah, popping them is a little fun, though. So you're just saying just skip it.
I know when I'm doing the wrong thing, but it's just like, it's like almost an obsessive thing. Like, get it over with, get it over with. I can't help myself. All right. Now, another one. Let's move on to the next one, because this is another common, and I've heard, I'm so interested in what you're going to say about splinters, because I have literally read the exact opposite information about how to take care of splinters. So I can't wait to hear what you're going to tell me, because I've been confused in the past.
Well, I'm happy to straighten you out, but also when I get done, want to hear what you heard.
Well, you know what it was too, is that I've read both to remove it and the ways to remove it. And then I've actually read information that says you're not supposed to remove it unless, like, and you're supposed to leave it there to work its way out naturally. And that always sounded really fishy to me, but then I thought maybe it's true.
So actually they both can be right. So if you do have a splinter, if it's a tiny splinter and it's not hurting you, then yes, you can leave it alone and see if it can work its way out over the next couple of days. But if it is hurting and it's tiny, then you could try to use some tape to try to pull it out that way. But if it's a little bit bigger, then you want to use some sharp tweezers. Sharp tweezers are your friend. They come in handy for several things. But you want to clean the tweezers with alcohol and then try to grip the end of the splinter with the tweezers and gently pull it out. If you're unable to get it with the tweezers alone, you could clean a needle with some alcohol and kind of run that along the length of the splinter and try to pull it out that way. If that's what you end up doing, then you want to just treat it as a wound and clean the site and use some antibiotic ointment and a Band-Aid. But you, regardless, you want to watch out for signs of infection, because sometimes those splinters are like icebergs. You see the tip, but there's a lot more below the surface. I certainly have come across that when I worked in urgent cares, pulling splinters out. But You want to look for redness, any swelling, warmth at the site on the skin, or any pus. But at that point, you'll need to seek medical care.
I've never taken splinters seriously, and now
I always take them out of the kids. Yeah, you I mean, pass them right off to me.
But that iceberg theory just blew my mind.
Look, I threw myself under the bus with the blisters, so I'm going to say this: I do splinters correctly, according to Sarah, because I do even the little light thing with the needle along, you know, the edge really lightly if I need to pull it out because I can't get it the other way. So I've been doing that okay. I feel I have to give myself a pat on the back.
And as you should. One last thing I want to say about splinters is, to check your tetanus immunization. If you get a splinter, and specifically a large splinter, and you've had your tetanus and it's been over 5 years, then talk with your healthcare provider about whether or not you need a booster.
Okay. You know, by the way, I just want you to know Stephanie's like keeping, is grading herself as we go through
each category. In typical mom style, right? Am I a success or a failure in life?
She's going to end up with her mom score. At the bottom.
A+.
And I'm not that concerned at all.
And he's like, whatever, typical dad, like, whatever, we're good. We've kept our kids alive.
You know, frankly, no, this is awesome stuff. And this episode is going to change the way we approach RVing for sure. Let's talk sprains and strains. And with our boys, sprains and strains could happen almost every single trip to a certain degree. So how should we deal with those?
Absolutely. Well, first thing you want to just check if it's mobile, if the joint can be moved around. If it can't, then that's certainly a more worrisome sign and to call your healthcare provider. But if it can be used, check to see if they can put weight on it, if it's sort of like a lower limb. And if it's without pain, if it's usable without much pain, then you can apply an ACE wrap. Just make sure that if you apply the ACE wrap that there's good circulation in the fingers or toes. That would be important. And then the good old rice is really helpful. So resting it, applying ice, compression, and elevating it above the heart would be really helpful. If the joint doesn't show signs of improvement within a week, then I would have it checked out. Because I have had people, unfortunately, come in walking on a leg with a broken bone that they didn't realize.
Okay,
as crazy as that sounds.
So your time frame is, because honestly, as a parent, sometimes you're like, shake it off, dude, you know, like, you're okay. Or the fact that kids sometimes are hurt, but they still continue to run around and you're like, oh, they must be fine because they're running around, but then they're really like actually hurt. But I like that time frame of about a week. So because you do worry and every day you question yourself, should I take them in or is this just a little bit of a strain? So that's helpful to have a time frame.
Absolutely. And if it's immobile and because they can't, if they're holding it or they don't want to touch it because it hurts so much, then it's best just to go have them checked out.
All right, that's a good guideline.
I'm really interested in sunburn because we're beach campers. You know, Stephanie and I love to go out to the Outer Banks and to Cape Hatteras, and it's just almost like inevitable that one of us will get sunburn because we just don't put enough lotion on or whatever. So how can we prevent
it? Oh, it's the reapplying throughout the day.
Yeah. I mean, look, a long day camping at the beach. I mean, how do we prevent it? What do we do when we get it?
Absolutely. And I'm very familiar with this because my entire family is very fair skinned. So the first thing you want to do is they make some really great products out there. And I'm not endorsing any products, but just sun prevention protection products, hats, long sleeve, shirts, rash guards, those sorts of things. So first of all, you want to prevent it if you can. But if you do get it, because it does happen, you just want to apply some cool water to the reddened area. You can use a moisturizer that contains aloe vera or soy to help soothe the skin if you're not allergic. And then if you're able to take, based on what your health history is, an anti-inflammatory, such as ibuprofen, you could certainly do that to reduce the discomfort. Make sure to stay really well hydrated. And again, if they're blistering, we don't want to pop that because then that can just increase the risk, actually not only for infection but also scarring. So if you think about where sunburns happen, they're in more visible areas. So you want to reduce the scarring. And then just take extra care to protect the skin as it heals. So wearing those long sleeve shirts and those sorts of things.
Now, what if actually like one of the kids or you starts to feel sick? You know, like I can remember being so badly sunburned sometimes when I was surfing as a teenager that by the end of the day, you almost feel slightly nauseous and dizzy. I mean, at that point, what do you need to do when it's that bad?
Yeah, when it gets that bad, then you just want to stay hydrated if you can and get in to see someone, seek medical care, because you may be developing a heat illness. that needs more serious attention.
Now, when you said an anti-inflammatory, I've never, our kids, at this point, I feel like we have enough sun awareness that like our kids never get really badly sunburned. But if they were to, and we were looking at that anti-inflammatory, for a child, would that be like a Motrin kind of a dose?
Yeah, so we talk about Motrin or ibuprofen. Either way, whatever the brand name that you choose or off-brand, just make sure you've weighed them recently so that you give them the appropriate dose. Because I find that actually kids might be underdosed by their parents because they were going off a weight that they had even 6 months ago. And kids grow, as we know. And so you just need to make sure you're giving them a proper dose.
That's what I would, I mean, that's me. That's totally me. Like I'd be like 20 pounds off or something. Like,
right.
I have no idea what my son's weigh right now. And I mean, I'm not ashamed to say that, but maybe I should be.
Just not a detail you've been carrying around.
It
in
happens
your brain.
All the time.
Like I remember the last time they were at the doctor and they got weighed and that's
they
exactly
were probably babies
your
last
point.
Time you remember, but they grow, they eat. Yeah. Well, they weigh themselves. So you just ask them when they come home today, because the last time, here's a little fun tip for you. Have identical twins and they weigh themselves. This happened a couple weeks ago and they were each like 63.4 pounds.
Wow, that's crazy.
They weighed in on the same day at the same time at the same
and
exact
Stephanie
weight.
Just had to rub in the fact that she knew that exact number.
It was pretty crazy.
Now, Sarah, did you intentionally make these go like get worse each time? I'm getting more and more frightened.
Oh, did she give us a list that's like it's like well, increasingly terrifying?
From sprains to sunburn to poisonous plants. I'm wondering if I'm going to make it through the segment.
I know.
So look,
shark bites are coming up.
Poisonous plants. I mean, this is a reality. If you're out hiking, if you're in a national park, if you have a little one who starts messing around with something.
Can I say that with our kids, since having kids, I've become increasingly petrified of poisonous plants because, you know, I probably used to when I was younger and not a parent, be like, oh, look, wild berries. Let's have these raspberries, whatever. But after having kids, I am petrified to find anything in the wild and interact with it.
So, Sarah,
absolutely.
Let's dive into these poisonous plants.
I've got a 9-10-year-old myself, and they like to go off adventuring in the woods, and I have a husband that certainly loves to do that as well. So, as you're traveling, you know, you could do a quick Google search even to see what the most common poisonous plants are in that area. The three most common across the country are poison sumac, oak, and ivy. The old tale about leaves of three, let them be. That's helpful, but not always, because other plants can mimic that. So just see if you can learn what those three plants look like. And then if you have touched the plant, know that it's the oil of the plant that causes the problem. So if you can, then wash off that area as quickly as you can after you've been exposed to that plant. Within 30 minutes would be great. And then remember that the oil can get on your clothes and your shoes. I once had a family that went clearing woods, and a family of boys, and they got into a truck afterwards, and the oil of the plant ended up getting on the car seat, and they had to have it cleaned because it kept exposing the family to that.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, crazy. But that's important to remember. And so also to remember that if you have a reaction to the plant, it can take up to 2 weeks to fully come out where the plant's oil touched you.
Stop
and
it.
So
really?
It doesn't mean...
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. So it doesn't mean that you've been re-exposed, because you can't, once you've washed the area, you've washed the oil off. It's just where the oil had touched the skin. So you may see it on your face where you wiped your forehead because it was sweaty, if you'd had it on your hand, those sorts of things. So, but apply a cool compress. I actually recommend a solution if you don't have an allergy to it, called Domburo's solution. It's a kind of an old school powder that you make into a wet compress. It's Domboro. You can find it at a pharmacy and use that. Try not to scratch. Monitor for open wounds that happen and signs of infection. And some of the old timey remedies I've heard people use of diluted bleach or hydrogen peroxide, please don't. They'll just make things worse.
Oh, that was my parents' favorite way. You just, you throw that diluted bleach right over your body and scream
Sarah,
your brains out.
I'm afraid you're really going to be like, dislike me after this, but I worked outside as a landscaper in like high school and college, and I got poison ivy quite a bit. And what I would do is I would scratch it up really, really badly, get it good and bloody and bleeding, and then I would run and dive in the ocean. And I would swim in the ocean for a while. Yeah. And you know what? I swear it worked for me. Is this not good advice to give others?
Bad first aid.
I'm so glad you you made it through that. So I wouldn't recommend that for others, but I think that your young and healthy immune system really helped you do well in that area.
Oh, that's so diplomatic, Sarah.
She sounds like a university professor.
She sounds like a nurse practitioner who hears wacky stories from people of self-care all the time.
Her students say crazy things like that all the time.
I know. Oh, my least favorite topic is coming up, and I almost want to skip it on the list, but I won't because I really, I like to pretend like I'm all big and bold and brave, but I hate snakes. I really do. And I scream when I see one.
In Albuquerque, New Mexico, you sure did scream.
I never saw one. I sat there staring at
that. That was the funny part about it.
I didn't scream. But my eyes never left the path in Albuquerque because I was so petrified of seeing a snake. So, all right, tell us. I don't want to think about snake bites, but if they happen, what do we do?
Yeah, I don't like them either, to be very honest with you. But it is important. Again, a quick Google search wherever you're traveling to of what the most common non-venomous and venomous snakes are, because as I've learned over the years, there are some snakes that aren't bad for us. They actually help us out, but still not a fan. But if it's a non-venomous snake that bites you, then you want to check the area and treat it as a puncture wound. Look for signs of infection, redness of the skin, swelling if the skin is warm to the touch, or then you need to seek medical care. If it's a venomous snake, you really want to, and this is hard, right? You really want to keep the person who was bitten calm to reduce the blood flow increasing in the body. You want to check the wound for swelling or redness or any discharge, and then watch them to see if they develop scary things like nausea or vomiting or tingling of the area. And then you want to seek medical care immediately. Wash the area with potable water again and soap. And you can use an elastic bandage, not as a tourniquet to completely cut off circulation, but to help to keep the venom in the extremity area. And if you have a venomous snake bite and they're having signs and symptoms that I've described, then you really need to call 911 for help and get them seen immediately. Don't try to cut the area or have it suck it out or apply ice. That can do more harm than good.
So don't do anything that you see in the movies. Just call 911. And I think, too, the basic of what you're saying is that venomous or non-venomous, like, you need to just seek medical attention with a snake bite immediately, regardless, to make sure, right?
Absolutely, especially if there's any question.
I'm also thinking that, like you said before, you need to research where you're going.
I like that she's bringing that up again and again.
It just takes a few minutes before you go on a trip, but having that extra knowledge of the specific area you are going to be camping in, hiking in, et cetera, could be really, really useful.
All right.
I think that's really important because even like your summer trip that you did, South Dakota's plants and wildlife is very different than New Jersey, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely.
The human life is also very different.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do that. The national parks are obviously great at that, right? They help you if you go to the visitor center first off. They'll really give you a lot of the times that rundown. But if you're not, you know, engaging with that educational material that they're offering, then it's important to at least do it on your own.
And you should, I think, you know, before some hike in Glacier National Park or Yellowstone, I mean, even if you are remote, you should know, is there a hospital nearby? Is there a ranger station nearby?
Absolutely.
You know, just have that basic knowledge of if something happens, where am I going to go?
Well, Sarah has some really great resources for us that she's going to share before we sign off with her on that. But before we do that, let's talk ticks. Unfortunately, this is becoming more and more of an issue for all of us in most parts of the country. So do you want to give us the rundown?
Yes, I also hate ticks. They are just little tiny things that can do some damage. So keep those sharp tweezers handy, because if you spot a tick and it's attached, then you want to use the tweezers to grasp as close to the skin as possible and just pull firmly away to get it separated. You want to wash the area with potable water and soap. Wash your hands afterwards, and then watch for any signs of tick-borne infections, such as a rash, such as flu-like symptoms, for up to 2 weeks afterwards. And then I want to draw attention to a particular new allergy that's popping up related to ticks. And so it's actually to mammalian meat products. It's called alpha-gal is the allergy. And so we're finding that it can come from tick bites. And it's an allergic reaction to red meat that can develop. And you eat something and then you don't get a reaction until 4 to 6 hours afterwards. So if you've had a tick bite and then you start having these weird reactions, I would really encourage you to have that checked out by your primary care provider.
I have not heard of that, so that's really helpful.
Breaking news on the RVFTA podcast. I mean, we only bring the latest and greatest to our audience.
How can anybody even survive without listening to this podcast? It's amazing. They wouldn't know anything.
This is required listening for everybody. All right, insect bites. We are going to make everybody listen to this one.
Thank you, Sarah.
Insect bites in general. Yes. What else do we need to know?
Yes, and before we move on, I forgot to say that if the tick has been attached for more than 48 hours, then go in and see your primary care provider or seek medical care because you likely need a prophylactic antibiotic.
Right. And so Sarah,
move on to the-
well, also people say, oh, well, I didn't see a bullseye, right? But it's not just a bullseye. It's also other kinds of rashes, other kinds of feverish reactions. So, right. I mean, that's kind of a misnomer.
Absolutely. And you can get the bullseye, but the bullseye may look different on different people. So it's best just to have it checked out if you develop a rash or other systemic symptoms like flu-like symptoms after having been bitten by a tick.
All right. So what about other bites?
Yeah. So insect bites, again, the mosquito bites or other bites that itch, try not to scratch them. That's so hard, I know. But if you do end up getting them, you can use an over-the-counter anti-itch product to apply to it. Or if you happen to have liquid Benadryl, you could dip a Q-tip in that and then apply that directly to the bite because that is the antihistamine that's going to help block that itch. If it's a bee or a wasp sting, I would remove the stinger again with those sharp tweezers or by scraping it away from the skin with, say, a credit card or a driver's license, and then wash the site with potable water and keep it clean. You can apply cold to the area or, again, that anti-itch product. And then just watch for signs of infection, but also watch for an allergic reaction, especially if you weren't aware that you were allergic. So if anybody gets tingling of the tongue, itching in the throat, swelling of the lips, you need to call 911 immediately. Otherwise, just watch for signs of infection.
This is almost like going through a novel. Like you're building up, the drama's increasing. We're going from poisonous plants to snakes to ticks to insect bites. And now we're just going to slow back down a little bit for everybody.
Give people a break.
Let everybody breathe a little bit and just talk about coughs and colds.
Just everybody relax.
And I'm almost relieved. I'm like, oh, thank God, I just have a cough and a cold. Don't worry. Sarah's going to end with a bang in a minute. But everyone, we're going to like relax for a minute now. So what do we do?
Take a breather, like you said. Yep. So it's important to know that most colds are viruses, and they last about 5 or 7 days typically, worse by day 3 or 4, and then better after that. You can end up with a kind of a hacky cough for 2 to 3 weeks afterwards, and that's still normal and part of the virus. It's best to stay hydrated, and specifically with non-caffeinated and non-alcoholic beverages because they can dehydrate you. Some people don't realize that.
Sarah, my husband makes fun of me because he says to the kids, well, if it were up to your mother, we just have to drink more water to solve all of our problems.
If one of the kids came home with a bullet wound, Stephanie would hand him a glass of water.
No, but this comes from, right, like drink more water. I mean, ultimately, isn't that at the root of all of our coughs and colds? Like, drink more water.
Absolutely. And staying well hydrated is so important.
Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate that.
So a gallon of coffee every morning.
Score one for mom.
Does not help.
No. People don't realize how actually dehydrating that caffeine can be. So if that's your beverage of choice, maybe if you get a cough or a cold, back off a little bit and sub in some water.
She's so diplomatic. Back off a little bit.
I can read in between the lines. Like what she really just said was ease off on the coffee,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, stop doing it to your body.
All right, now the next one also seems...
Oh, I've got an elevation sickness.
You do. Mm-hmm. But still, it almost seems... I have a sigh of relief here compared to some of the other problems.
Oh, not if you've ever had it.
That's true. It can be bad.
It's serious and it feels awful. So the best cure for elevation sickness is to prevent it in the first place, right, Sarah?
Absolutely. And first of all, if you're going to higher elevations and you're not used to traveling to those elevations, then have that conversation with your healthcare provider before you go to make sure you're healthy to do that. And then we're talking about elevation sickness. We're typically talking about 6,500 feet and above. So just stay well hydrated, go slowly. And then if you start to have symptoms such as a headache, loss of appetite, nausea, unusual exhaustion, then really the treatment is to get out of there. So you want to descend to the lower elevation and wait for an improvement of the symptoms, which shouldn't take that long. Now, it can get pretty serious. And so if you have someone that really has a severe headache or their personality even, they're acting bizarrely or they're having some shortness of breath or chest pain, at that point, that can be very serious. You need to call 911 and get out of there. You want to go down elevation.
As fast as you can. I mean, is there any reason why you need to slowly descend out of a high elevation? I mean, it's perfectly fine. You just like get out of there, get back down to the ground.
For what most of, I think your listeners will be doing, going down at the pace that you would normally would be okay. Certainly there's specifics that need to be involved with really high altitude hiking or climbing. That would be more of another conversation.
Understood. Totally.
Now, Sarah, a lot of people that have had to deal with allergies from maybe day one with either food allergies or something else with their children, they're good at managing them. But some of us who haven't really had to manage a severe allergy, we still need to know the basics because they can really emerge at any time. So what do we need to know to be just ready to deal with allergies?
Yes. If someone you're with develops these symptoms and they haven't had them before, you're right. An allergy can pop up at any point in time. So you're really looking for hives, a red raised rash, itchy red or flushed face, swollen lips, trouble breathing or wheezing, shortness of breath. Those are all very important warning signs. You want to remove the allergen if you know what it is, and then call 911 because time is not on your side in those situations. And it's easier for unless you're advised by the 911 operator, for you to stay put and let some help come to you. That's really important. If it's a lesser of a reaction, such as localized itching or a mild rash, maybe some nausea, you want to remove the allergen and you can take an antihistamine and monitor the symptoms. But I would always notify your primary care provider so that they can mark it or further advise you based on what you've been exposed to.
I know, God forbid, something more serious happens. We do want people to be prepared. We do want to address this in this podcast. So tell us how we're going to deal with something more severe like chest pains or stroke symptoms.
Yeah, I think this is important too because you have people that just go gangbusters out there, right? They're just having a great time and they're going to go do it. They want to see it all. They want to hike to the highest point and maybe they're not well conditioned to do that. So it's important to recognize that if someone develops chest pain, it's more of a center pressure and pain. It might radiate down the left arm or up the jaw. Women exhibit symptoms a little bit differently. It could just feel like a really bad case of heartburn. And so that's important to note. And at that point, you need to try to keep them and yourself calm. Call 911. And if you have two baby aspirins to give them to chew, that would be important. And this is really important for people that might be higher risk. So those that are overweight or unconditioned, who have a family history of heart disease, who are over the age of 50, or who have a history of high cholesterol or high blood pressure. Really important to be aware.
And I know I really appreciate you bringing this up because I know that there's been some health campaigns about like stroke symptoms and everything, simply because really this is actually like, what do they say? Like a silent killer of a lot of women, right? So if there's like a good website link that we can put in the show notes for just those like typical stroke symptoms and everything, that would be really helpful too.
Absolutely. And I'll include that. And for strokes, the symptoms, some people are familiar with the acronym FAST. So FAST means F, face. You want to ask the person to smile. And do you see a droop? A, arms. Ask the person to raise both arms in front of them. Is one lagging or drifting off? Ask the person to speech. Ask them to repeat a simple phrase to assess if they sound garbled or if they can do that. And at that point, again, time is not on your side. You need to call 911 and get them treated right away.
All right. Well, Sarah, I want you as my nurse practitioner.
Sarah, I'm so thankful for this. Like, I just really feel like this is one of the most important episodes that we've done in over 200 episodes, and we're not done yet. We
got a lot more. And I'm going to have to control myself because I have Sarah's cell phone, and I'll be like, we'll be like in the woods, and I'll be like, I want to call her, and I'll be like, no, you can't do that, Stephanie. But we're going to come back in a minute, and Sarah is going to give us the information that we do need to be able to learn more and just feel really prepared
and
when we're out
and
there.
And even buy or assemble our own first aid kit so that we're prepared. So stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We just learned a lot, but we're not done yet. Sarah's got even more resources and information for us that are going to carry us through and help us learn more on our own. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco. Jayco's Melbourne Class C motorhome, my personal favorite of all of them, is a top-line comfort backed with by rock-solid durability and an industry-leading two-year limited warranty. It's built on a Mercedes 3500 chassis and powered by 188 horsepower V6 turbo diesel engine. I just like the nice, pretty inside. The Melbourne is going to keep you going. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
All right. I lost my co-host. It's complicated, people. I lost him. He had to go, but we're going to carry on and we're going to finish this segment. We'll manage through without the guy, right, Sarah?
That's right.
We always do. All right. So let's talk different resources that are out there for people to learn more. You taught us so much, but I think that one of the things that we learn when we listen to first aid information is how much we don't know. So what are some great like courses and classes that are out there that we can take ourselves?
Absolutely. And it's important to know that I just covered the highlights. Certainly, as you've mentioned, there's so much more that you can learn. And so I really recommend courses by either the American Heart Association or the Red Cross. The American Heart Association has a basic first aid course, and we'll, as you said, include links to all of this for the listeners. And then the Red Cross offers a basic first aid course, and they also offer a wilderness course, which may be really informative for people that are going to be doing a lot of backpacking and hiking out there.
Yeah, I never even, honestly, I know it sounds silly, but I really didn't know that these existed and that these courses were online for us to take. So I'm going to link to all of them in the show notes, and I guarantee you that we are going to actually do these ourselves. All right, so let's move on to kits. Now, I've always just bought the random kits, right, that you can buy in the store or online. I'm not sure if I'm getting the right thing. You know, we'll get a smaller one for our backpacks or one for the car. What do you recommend in terms of first aid kits?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people do that. And a lot of what's included is going to be fine. But if you wanted to make your own, we're going to include some links to some DIY first aid kits from the Red Cross, a link to the Mayo Clinic that offers a basic first aid kit list. And then REI has a good first aid kit list too, again, for more of the backpacking, hiking folks. Or like you said, you can buy your own. I actually really like the Adventure Medical Kits. You can buy them online. They're very comprehensive. I'm not saying you need the biggest that they have, but even their basic kits can be really good. But one thing to remember is that regardless of your kit, you need to make sure to check it for expiration dates on a regular basis. You can make that part of your habit for the beginning of the camping season.
Okay. And I love that advice. And I'm going to put that into, you know, we always do that like spring stock up content. And I've never put that in, like, you know, when you're stocking up the camper and filling it up with the paper towels and everything, you also need to check your first aid kit. I'm brutal at this because there's so much in the first aid kit that you have for years because you never use it.
Absolutely.
But then you go and you need that antibiotic, you know, or you need that, I mean, not antibiotic, but, you know, the wipe, the antibacterial wipe, or you need that Band-Aid and there's nothing left in there.
Absolutely. Or it, like you said, it's expired. And so that's actually a good thing to remember, even for your home medicine cabinet, to go through and check it periodically, because you might have cold medicine that you've had for years that you've never had to use and it's long expired.
All right. We're checking our smoke detectors when we change the clocks, and maybe we all need to add our first aid supplies when we change the clocks too, and just kind of do it all at that point in the spring and the fall.
That's a great idea.
I always need my systems. All right. Now, we have been at the campground. We've been with people, with friends at the campground, and we have had to seek medical care. It happens. Adults and kids, things happen. You get hurt. I've always said my kids have luckily decided to get more injuries in our own living room than they ever had at the top of a mountain or anything. That's how it works around us. But, you know, you're in these situations and you need to kind of have a plan so that you don't panic when it happens. I'll never forget when I was first on our first trip to Myrtle Beach, I was talking to a friend who loved going down there, and she gave me her list of all of her favorite spots. And on that list, she had the urgent care numbers. And I was laughing because I was like, oh my gosh, that's so funny. She has urgent care. And then I realized, how smart is that? Like, and I adjusted my thinking to always know where those medical places would be. But it took somebody else sort of teaching me that to get there. So what do you recommend sort of in terms of knowing when to, you know, reach out and get medical help?
Absolutely. First, I think it's important just to know your contact information for your own primary care provider. So if you had a question, you could call them. If they're in office, they could answer. If not, sometimes they have an after-hours line that you can talk with, and then they could advise you where to go. For more minor illnesses, say those colds, the strep, the sprains or strains, even minor wound care, you can actually check out what is called retail health clinics. So those are clinics staffed often by nurse practitioners or physician assistants all over the country. And they're located oftentimes in a pharmacy, so CVS or Walgreens. And we'll put some links up there for the national chains. And you can know that if you've been seen at one of those in your hometown, they'll have your records when you show up, even if it's cross country, which is really helpful. But if you need something more, say you really are concerned you've broken a bone or you need stitches, then that's when you need to think about an urgent care. And so that's where Google is your friend to find the closest urgent care to you. And that's where they oftentimes have x-ray on site and can do the suturing if you needed stitches, those sorts of things. But then how does the ER come into play? We get a lot of questions about that. People will show up to the ER with all kinds of things, but the ER is really for emergencies. So when everything else is closed or you have that shortness of breath, trouble breathing, needing to call 911, that's where you'll end up, is the emergency room.
All right. I like that breakdown. It helps me. And to be honest, I know that a lot of these, you talked about retail health. A lot of this is like a newer thing, right? Where you can get so much care at the Walgreens or the CVS. And I never would have thought of them as sort of that place to go, like say before we were talking about sunburns or whatever, right? And just to check and see if we were okay. And that's such a good thing to have in the back of my mind. And we'll definitely put all of those links in the show notes for people. And by the time we're done with this interview, I'm actually thinking, well, we really just should have a little PDF that we let people download so they can have it, you know, on hand if they need to get to anything. I'm more convinced of that by the time we're done with this episode. All right, now let's talk emergency numbers. I know my five-year-old, we've been going over this a lot lately because he's at that age where we're really trying to make sure he knows what to do in case of an emergency. Our nine-year-olds are, you know, they know the drill already. What should we know about, you know, having our emergency numbers ready to go?
Absolutely. And we think about, well, at least my generation thinks about the landline, which is fast disappearing, and that they can make sure to use a telephone. But it's really important that they know how to operate your cell phone mm-hmm. when it comes to dialing an emergency number, so that they can know how to dial either a parent or 911. So that's really important. Also, it's important for everyone to carry a list of their current medications and supplements that they take and their health history. And make sure that it's in an accessible place in case they need to seek medical care so that you have it. So that when you go in, you don't just describe, I take a little white pill for blood pressure. Well, that could be a lot of different kinds. So it's really important to have that information handy.
I know on the Apple phone, there's a health app that you kind of put your information in and that emergency medical responders can access without your passcode if they need to. I'm not sure if there's the same thing for an Android, but it's worth looking into if, you know, you do have an Apple phone.
Absolutely. And just make sure to keep it maybe on that same check when you check your medicines for expiration dates. Check that to make sure that it's the most current information because conditions change, medicines change. So it's just really important to think that through.
Oh, thank you, Sarah, so much. I really appreciate you coming on and helping us. The difference between being prepared for even a little minor hiccup or emergency and not being prepared is often, you know, it makes all the difference in the world, you know. And so this is just such an important bit of information that we're providing for our listeners. And we are so incredibly grateful that you are willing to help us out as an expert in the field. Truly grateful to you.
Well, I'm so happy to be on, and I feel like knowledge is power, and so people can feel more empowered to take care of these things as they come up.
All right, Sarah, thanks a lot, and we will see you at the campground.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back to the show, everybody, and a gigantic thank you to Sarah Hubbell for coming on and really just breaking down everything we need to know about first aid while we're traveling and when we're at home, because this is not just a vacation mm-hmm. thing, right? Being prepared for injuries with your kids. So we're going to do the RVFTA News Roundup, but before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. And if you are thinking of winterizing and still using your RV, we want you to check out one of our, ironically, favorite products from Thetford, which is the porta potty lineup. We've got the Thetford porta potties.
Well, some people do winter camping, and if it's a mild weekend, they just unwinterize and then winterize again. I don't even want to go through that for a weekend of winter camping. We just throw in one of Thetford's porta potties into the rig, and we use that as the bathroom, and we don't open up any of the water. And that also allows us to camp on really, really cold nights and not have to worry at all about water running through the system and freezing any pipes.
Yeah, and we've also used it with Penny, the pop-up camper, and I've actually included it when I rented Penny, the pop-up, to a 7-month pregnant lady.
And we gave it to her for free. We were thinking Absolutely. Of making an additional charge to like rent the little porta potty, but she was pregnant. She got it for free.
She just got it.
So if anyone
it.
Wants to rent Penny and you're pregnant, we'll throw in the porta potty.
No, we've also even thrown this into the back of the pickup truck just at various times when we know we're doing things like festivals or whatever and the bathrooms are going to be gross.
Doesn't everybody keep a Thetford porta potty in the back of their pickup
it's
truck?
So convenient.
If you have little kids, they always need to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are just ridiculously simple and convenient, and they're easy to empty. I mean, I'm guessing they're easy to empty. You tell me they are.
No, they are very sanitary. Empty. There's no mess. And also the way they're designed, there's no smell during the process of using them. We use them in that glamping tent at Sandy Pond's
That's
campground.
Right. We bring this thing all
we
over
We put
the
it
place.
Over in the corner.
I
there was
about that.
There was no smell emanating from it at all.
All right, go to Thetford.com and you can find all of the products that they have available. But that's another one of our personal favorites. The potty.
Comes in a variety of sizes as well.
All right. If you listened last week, you know that we are very excited that we are going to be releasing Kate Dunbar's first cookbook.
over the moon.
And November,
Stephanie has been working on editing the pages of this and designing.
It's coming along. I'm working.
This is what she's doing from 10 p.m. till midnight every night. Is she is designing, doing
the
pagination.
I have time to do this during my workday.
But Stephanie, it looks beautiful.
It does.
And you know what? And to give all credit to Kate here,
the photography
is phenomenal.
And Kate blew me away when she sent me the files. I couldn't believe how beautiful.
I'm
going to
drop this on you right now.
We're going to
have to do a behind the scenes episode about how she made this cookbook, because she packed up solo and headed out in the Airstream or something like that. She took off without the family.
It's on the calendar. It's on the podcast calendar. It's like November 15th.
Oh, good.
coming up with this idea. It's already on the schedule.
But no, we said we were going to have her on to talk about the recipes. In the cookbook.
Well, she can
I
also
want the
talk
behind
about that.
The scenes story to her making this, because she took off from like family and friends. And Kate went out into the desert, basically.
She did, and we knew she was doing it, and we knew that she was doing the food styling and the photography, but the product was just, I mean, it really was like.
Girl
it
can
was
take
phenomenal.
Some photos.
Yeah, absolutely.
Girl can take some photos. Kate is a serious photographer as well.
So you're going to want to stay tuned for all the details. Join our private Facebook group. If you don't like regular Facebook and it feels overwhelming, if you join our private Facebook group. It stays really friendly there, and we, you know, we'll give you all the information that you need or over on Instagram. Also, stay tuned because in just a couple of weeks, we're going to have our sticker magnet cling pop-up sale over in the RVFTA Facebook group. I did this a few months ago. Just, it's a quick way. I hate doing merch, but this way people love their magnets or their clings or something. So what I do is I put the announcement in it. I just simply give you an amount that you PayPal me with your address and whether you want a sticker, a cling, or a magnet, and literally it closes at the end of the week, and anybody that's ordered one, I mail it all out within that one day. Done. That's how I can deal with merch.
That's right. Stephanie has such psychological issues with merch.
Because no matter what you do, you can't control everything
with
merch. No, you can't.
Here's the problem.
Even when
merch.
You work with the best companies, something happens.
There's no issue with merch if you're selling it at a physical location and people are showing up to buy it, like a concert for a band. But when you're selling merch and then having to ship it all via mail, it just gets really complicated.
You're
really
not
fast.
In charge of everything. Like people, like what? Was it the UPS that like it like crunched like five of our flags or something, and admitted
some
fault.
Machine. It was not UPS, by the way. It was USPS.
USPS, yeah.
The machine, they confessed the machine devoured like five of the flags. Like
they were like,
them.
Oh, your machine like, ate your flags.
They were like, they no longer exist.
I mean, how can I operate in that kind of world where there's just machines out there ready to devour our RVFTA flags? Merch kills me. So, but I will do this one little itty bitty thing, and I do it every
so
once
if you're
in
walking
a while.
Around out there in an RVFTA shirt, you better feel good and guilty about it. We want you to feel really bad about those RVFTA hats.
Because it crushes my soul. It does.
Listen, if you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving us a review over on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps us quite a bit. Puts quite a smile on our faces. We sure do appreciate it. It's like getting a little Christmas gift every time we get a review.
All right. I just wanted to say thank you to our three sons because I obviously connected. They left us a review over on iTunes and they said, Jeremy and Stephanie have become household names. And after listening to most of the RVFTA episodes, I feel that we are friends. Their content is always fresh. And new. I love hearing about their adventures, recommendations, and day-to-day challenges traveling with three young boys. Our three boys are on their own now, and so many times I look back and wish we could have camped more with them. They are spot on when they talked about how the family benefits from their travel and camping experiences. We are fortunate to be retired and able to travel at our leisure. We love to hear Stephanie and Jeremy's tips on all things camping. My one caution about this podcast is that it may cost you money, but it will be money well spent. We have purchased quite a few of the products that they recommend, from Anderson Levelers to the Thetford Tank products. The podcast provides lots of great information and they put together in an entertaining way. Kudos to the great couple who work well together. Keep the episodes coming.
And we sure will keep the episodes
I do.
Coming.
I always appreciate hearing from our empty nesters. I mean, there's just something about hearing feedback from people who have been through what we're talking about that never ceases to have a special place in my heart. So thank you to all those empty nesters out there that take the time to stop and write us emails or comments or reviews. It really means the world for us to be cheered on from that generation that already did this.
Appreciate it so much. And if you are that young family out there with young kids, thinking about getting an RV or just struggling to get to the campground, if you do have an RV, do your best. Take it easy on yourself. Get as many of those fun experiences in as you can. And
we'll get through this.
You'll get through it and you'll look back fondly on all of it. And we'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.